And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 4th, 2021. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to discussing an exciting climate bill that kicked off 2021, and also to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole on hydrofluorocarbons, a super greenhouse gas, and discuss some potential better options for the future. Tune in.
Well, Mariah, in the hurly-burly sausage factory of legislation at the end of last year, I don't know if you remember. Remember 2020? Remember how terrible 2020
was? I've forgotten. I think I blocked it out.
Well, somewhere near the end of that hellscape, there was a bill, a big bill to fund the government, in addition to COVID relief and all kinds of stuff. But it turns out that that bill finally passed in late December, and the bill was 5,000 pages long, right? So it was a classic thing where one side of the political aisle will complain about how long and, you know, how many pages the bill is, as if that is a real indicator of complexity and evil intent inside the bill. Anyway, one of the reasons the bill was 5,000 pages long was because in Congress, nothing had happened during 2020. In fact, not much had happened in the previous 4 years. So everybody who had a bill wanted to do something looked and said, this bill in late 2020 is the only train leaving Washington. It's the only thing that's going to get acted on by Congress. So I'm going to try and get my little bit of heaven into that bill. Fine. One of the things that made its way into that bill was a whole bunch of energy-related changes and improvements, basically a climate bill that had been floating around in Congress for years. And most of that stuff got piled into the bill. So it turns out that in addition to being a COVID bill and all the other things that you may remember about that bill, it is a pretty good energy, climate and energy package. And I think it's worth celebrating. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Does that make sense?
That sounds great.
So what happened was that this bill was passed. And inside that bill, there are, as I say, a bunch of good energy and climate related actions. But one of the notable things is that it was passed, 70 senators voted for this thing, and the majority of the people in the House, which means that there's this little glimmer of recognition that certain things have to happen, right? And that there was enough, after several years, there was enough sort of bipartisan pressure to get this stuff into a bill. I think it's also interesting to remember, the beginning of the last Congress, AOC had just been elected, right? There was a lot of talk about the Green New Deal, and there was a lot of pressure on Nancy Pelosi to name a very aggressive climate committee, right? And then she took some heat because she appointed a representative from Florida, I think named Kasten, as the head of the climate committee, and everyone said, Nancy's just going to bury climate in this backwater committee. Turns out that committee was involved in pushing forward all of this good stuff into the climate bill. So I think it's a little bit of a feather in Nancy Pelosi's cap, right? In the Senate side, it was, unbelievably enough, Manchin from West Virginia, the Democrat from West Virginia, who is basically, I have thought, is a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry, right? Joe Manchin. And Murkowski from Alaska, which of course is another fossil fuel giant, right? Those two people in the Senate got together on the Senate side to put a bunch of stuff. Still in all, what fell out of that kind of negotiation was a pretty good climate bill. There's more than we can really talk about, but I wanted to sort of point at some of the highlights, right? So some of the stuff that they did was to extend for another couple of years tax credits for wind turbines and solar panels, right? So that's a big deal because I don't know if you remember, but the Vineyard Wind off of Cape Cod right? These things need the production tax credit to be in place in order to make the construction of these wind turbine, wind farms financially feasible, right? So having that in place is a good thing, and they got that in. There are credits for, there's a lot of money for R&D, right? So now the Department of Energy is going to be, in fact, part of this bill, which is really good, is said that the sense of the Congress, so that's in quotation marks, but I mean, somewhere in the bill, it says, we are all voting on this thing. And it's our belief that the Department of Energy has to prioritize clean energy development, right? Basically, which is a really good thing, because that what that means is you can go back to that later on. This is a building block to come back to and say, hey, we all voted that we believe the DOE should be working on this advanced energy stuff. You know, let's do it. But one of the thing that keeps getting pointed out in most of the reports that I've seen about this particular bill is that it takes the most dramatic action that it takes is it puts the responsibility and it tells the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, that it must phase out super greenhouse gases in the next 15 years. Okay. 15 years is a long time, right? 15 years from now is 2035, right? But once the EPA starts down a path, I think there's things may go faster than a 15-year timeline. But what for my mind, talking about these super greenhouse gases is kind of a teachable moment. It brings together a bunch of stuff that's important to think about, to know about. So it's not just, oh yeah, we're going to cut these strange gases that no one can pronounce. This stuff does have consequences. So let me just talk myself through it. What's your question?
So I think it'd be good to clarify what do you mean by super greenhouse gases? Probably is this the hydrofluorocarbons and the methane and black carbon, that kind of stuff?
So in particular, what they're talking about is something called the hydrofluorocarbon, HFCs, right? And the HFCs are, right, they are molecules built from hydrogen, fluorine, and carbon, right? And because of the properties of those three atoms, of the carbon, hydrogen, fluorine, they tend to be extremely stable, right? So they last a long time. That's why, and some of the hydrofluorocarbons are what was in the, they're related to what did the ozone hole, right? The CFs.
The chlorofluorocarbons, right?
Chlorofluorocarbons, right? That was in the hairspray in the 1980s because it was so stable and harmless, right? Anyway, the hydrofluorocarbons are many thousands of times more potent than CO2 in terms of capturing and reflecting the infrared light, right? So when you equate an atom of an HFC, a hydrofluorocarbon, with CO2, it's thousands of times more potent, and it lasts in the atmosphere thousands of times longer. Okay, so it's really, I mean, it's a super greenhouse. I mean, it really does this incredible job of trapping heat compared to carbon dioxide. The only saving grace of these HFC molecules is that there's very much less of it. Right, so that every car is putting out CO2, but there's not so much HFCs being emitted. Right, where are the HFCs being emitted? Okay, the HFCs are used in refrigeration and in air conditioning. Right, so when you hear that hum on your refrigerator, and it starts to pump, and you know that cycle that you hear in your kitchen late at night as the refrigerator keeps your milk cold. Well, what it's doing is pumping liquid HFCs through that refrigerant system, right? And ultimately, that's where the HFCs are used primarily for air conditioning systems. And the stuff is very good. The HFC molecules are very good for various reasons at this air conditioning process. Full stop. The EPA is going to try and replace, is mandated to find new molecules, replace that stuff, get rid of the HFCs by the year 2035. Okay, fine. But then you can draw that thread one step further to say that by 2035, every inner city in the United States, Mumbai, Dubai, places where millions of people live, will be about 130 degrees Fahrenheit every day, right? So how are you going to provide air conditioning for those billions of people in a way that's sustainable? You can't give them all HFCs, right? So this restriction where the EPA is pulling back the use of HFC will demand that there be greenhouse neutral, I guess, shall we say, greenhouse neutral gases that are used in refrigeration is good, because then all of a sudden you've got this environmental justice issue, right? I've got an air conditioner, right? Keep my house cool. Why should I have one? But, you know, people in other places not have these things. And how are we going to provide provide this minimal thing where you have to stay cool, right? So it's an interesting, there's this chain of events. I mean, so I guess the reason I'm harping on this is that when we talk about eliminating hydrofluorocarbons, controlling them, finding substitutes, it's not an esoteric engineering issue that nobody cares about, right? It translates down into very concrete, real world sustainability issues and
life and death. I mean, you know, certainly if we don't get them out of the atmosphere, they will kill people over a longer period of time, right? Because they're such super greenhouse gases. But at the same time, with the planet heating up, if we don't have a suitable replacement, people will die because they'll die of heat stroke, or they'll die of not being able to keep their, you know, their whatever it is that needs to be cool.
Just to stay cool. Yeah.
Right. So it's there's two prongs to that life or death piece.
And there's one article I'll put up, which is then this sort of fascinating wrinkle. And it is the idea that there's this gas called propane. Okay, everyone's got a propane tank probably to run your outdoor grill. A lot of people use propane to heat. So it's propane is similar to methane. It's a hydrocarbon gaseous kind of fuel that you can do stuff with. It turns out that propane can also be used as a refrigerant liquid. And the advantage of that is that it has extremely low, it's almost the same greenhouse equivalent warming as CO2. So that's much, from a refrigeration standpoint, it's much better to use propane than it is to use the HFCs, because the gas that leaks out doesn't cause so much global warming. Of course, it may catch fire.
Right.
And keep in mind that your refrigerator has one charge of this propane stuff that it can use for years. So you're not burning the propane. That's not the issue. You're recycling the propane through the back of the refrigerator just the way you are currently recycling the hydrofluorocarbons in the back of the refrigerator. And there's a question of, at least from the article that I read, said that there are certain companies in the United States that are opposing the use of propane, not so much because it's dangerous, but because they control the market on the HFCs, and they don't want to let, say, for example, everybody in China use propane to run their air conditioners because they want the business. So it gets.
And there's also, isn't there these hydrofluoroolefins, HFOs, which is a new generation of synthetic chemicals that have lower global warming potentials that U.S. chemical manufacturers are making, right? So there's that wrinkle too, where we've got these HFOs that maybe people want to start using.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think that there's, when you talk about $2 trillion of money for research and development and doing all good things, finding some refrigerant gas that allows people around the world to cool their food, cool their homes, have air conditioning and whatnot without destroying the planet in the process, that's a great research project, right?
Big business.
And for me, it always brings around the idea that you can have a big idea, like we want to stop climate change, but it always translates down into some specific decision, like about how the specifics you're going to do about it. So you go from, I want to protect people in Mumbai and make sure they have air conditioning. And all of a sudden you're down to arguing about whether or not you should have propane or HFC olefins as your refrigerant gas. And who's going to make that? Who's going to make the money? Right? That's, I mean, in some sense, it's very interesting, right? But these efforts come down to, you know, nitty gritty decisions. Anyway, let me rewind. Let's rewind 10 minutes, get back to the bill that we started talking about, right? So there's this great bill. It's an honest to God climate bill that was hidden inside the COVID relief bill, right? It puts lots of money into many of the right places. From what I've seen, it does not do a lot of patting on the head of the fossil fuel interest and keep them happy, right? And so we can do and keep propagating them along, right? This is a good thing. It's a basis for Joe Biden to take further steps, right? Because there's money in the pipeline. He can do some things. It's all a good deal. And we should be pretty happy. So there you go.
Yeah,
that's
excited.
Good news for the beginning of 2020.
It's a good way to kick off the year.
So what I'll do is I'll put up some links to some of the stuff that we talked about. I hope I didn't wander too far off the beaten path here with my discussion about propane, but I think it's kind of interesting. If you have a question about super greenhouse gases, we didn't even get into the black soot question, right? I mean, so that's a whole, we'll have to have a whole show on that sometime. Send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be talking about. You can listen to this phone on your smartphone using Stitcher or any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please tell your friends to listen to us. Please rate us so that we can move up in the rankings. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.